Good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of the Happier Abroad podcast. I'm your host, Winston Wu. Today we're going to talk to an expat in Europe who posts on our forum. He posts as username Eurobrat. That's E-U-R-O-B-R-A-T. So I guess that means he's a European brat. Anyways, he's lived in about two countries in Europe so far and has traveled in several other countries in Europe. So we're going to do an interview with him and find out his experiences there and any advice he could give and just learn from what he's learned so far. So I'm going to welcome Eurobrat. How are you doing today?
Good. That was a very formal interview, and actually you got it wrong. I've lived in three countries in Europe, so not two. The other being the UK.
Oh, okay. Well, sorry about that. Yeah, I was just giving an estimate. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up in Europe?
Well, basically, I started coming to Europe, and when was it? About 18 was the first time I went over to London and did a semester abroad, basically, and was over there for a while, about 8 months-ish, a little shy of a year. Got a really good grip on London, was able to figure out the city in that amount of time, all the ins and outs. Then I kind of got addicted to the different cultures here in Europe and the languages and the different customs and the food and everything. So I just kept, every year after that, I kept saving up money, and I was in college at the time, and my big thing was to save up money for the year and then go take a 2-week trip to Europe and go like exploring all around to the different countries, different cities. I'd always look up hotspots. A lot's changed since in the last 10 years when I first started coming to Europe. A lot has changed, so the hotspots back then are no longer as hot as they were. But that's how I first started, like, pretty much traveling around Europe and basically fell in love with Europe and European culture. I don't like all countries here in Europe. I do have biases now that I've been here long enough and had enough experience with them. I think I'm entitled to those biases. So,
yeah, so what brought you there in the first place? I mean, were you just looking for more culture or a better life or just getting just wanting to get out of the rat race in America? Or,
well, yeah, it's just I mean, at first it just came, you know, at first it was just what, you know, vacations and stuff, and then as my life unfolded and I decided that I wanted to go live and work in Europe and experience and get an even firmer grip on Europe and European culture. And so at this point now, I just don't see myself going back because I'm just still enjoying it. Whereas in the US, there were a couple periods in my life where I just got stuck for 1 or 2 years, frustrated because things weren't moving along as fast. I wasn't enjoying myself. Everything became boring and, repetitive, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, where in the US were you from?
I'm originally from Southern California. I've lived all over the West Coast. I've lived in the Midwest. Been to pretty much 48 states. The only states I haven't been to are Alaska and Montana. But other than that, I've been pretty much everywhere in the U.S.
Yeah, and so what were you doing in the U.S.? I mean, did you work or did you have a business?
I actually agree with you. You say that the Southwest is your favorite part of the U.S., and I think so, too. I think the Southwest and the Pacific Northwest are good. And I do have, like, I do love California. I don't like California politically, but as a state, the everything else for me is just perfect, too.
Yeah. So what were you doing? Did you have an occupation in the U.S.? And
I've jumped around a couple different careers. I won't really get into it too much, but mainly I've worked at big companies and small, medium companies doing a lot of sales, account management for technology companies and other media type companies. So.
Okay. So you went to England, and then after that you went to Germany or Italy, right?
No. I was in England when I was about 18 years old. I was in London, actually, because I was going to school there, and I was going to school right there on the Strand. I lived in a hostel in a room with, like, three other guys that were constantly switching, and one of them was, I think a couple of them were Australian, one was from New Zealand, and they were working there, and actually just had an awesome time. I consider London like the gateway to Europe, basically. You can find, it's such a big and multicultural city, you can find pretty much every European there, and, you know, working various different types of jobs, anything from low-level jobs to high-end professional-type jobs.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people lump America and England together as, like, one and the same. I mean, did you find them to be almost the same, and what are some differences or similarities?
Culturally, yes, I do find the UK to be extremely close to the US. The differences are in political. There's a lot of political differences between the UK and the US. I would think in that sense that they're closer to Europeans. The lifestyle and culture is more similar to Europeans in how that they get, you know, 30 days off a year and they travel around Europe, that kind of thing. Whereas Americans prefer to just work all the time.
Yeah.
The companies are so stingy and they don't give more than, 7, 10 days, 12 days off paid.
Yeah, and plus, you know, Britain has national health care too, I heard. But, you know, my impression of you know, the British people is that they seem more down to earth than Americans. They're not as arrogant or bragging. Did you get that sense?
I think Londoners are down to earth, but I mean, if you go to smaller towns in England, you can find it's basically the same thing as the US. The culture, Londoners are like a specific, for me, they're a specific type of people there in the UK. They're nothing like any of the other people from other towns. They are down to earth. There's some snobby ones, but they're very open and willing to meet new people, especially foreigners, because they grew up with it and they're used to it, and they are used to the foreigners there. Not all of them, but the majority, yeah.
Did you find it easier to make friends in London, or to socialize, or to meet people? Or?
Oh, yeah, because it's a big city. I mean, you can go, everybody, you know, going out there is a huge deal. It's not a small town.
Yeah, well, I mean, not all cities are the same. Like, you know, you go to Seattle, or, I mean, it's not easy to make friends there. That's why there's called a Seattle Freeze. And, you know, Los Angeles is a big town, but...
Everyone's so fake there?
Yeah, everyone is fake, and you know, you have to join these cliques, and, I mean, it's just not a very down-to-earth vibe, and so, you know...
Every city has its own, like, culture going on. Now, for London, I would say, is a very open place. The thing that bugs me about London is it's extremely expensive. To have a quality life there, you do have to be working, making a decent amount of money. It is crowded.
Right. What about the rest of England? I mean,
I've only been in like a small handful of other places. I've been up to Manchester. I've been to Sheffield and Chesterfield, and they're quite boring. I don't know anyone who's going, oh, I'm going to go travel. I'm going to go to Sheffield. It's like, what? Do you even know what's in Sheffield? There's nothing there. You know, it'd be like going to, like, you know, Columbia, Missouri or something like that, some small little town in the Midwest.
Yeah. Okay, so so after England, you started living in Italy, right?
No, that's not true. So then I was working in California, was making a lot of money there, and just saving up my money and traveling 1, 2, 3 times a year over Europe. I've also been to Mexico and Canada, of course. Never really had an interest that much in Asia. I would like to, there's certain places that I'd like to visit someday, and they're still on my list. But for me, I fell in love with traveling around Europe and the culture shocks that you get. I actually like that culture shock that you get going from country to country, and everything changes, the food, the people, the language.
Yeah, the currency too.
The architecture and on the building chain, everything, the whole thing just changes.
Yeah, I remember that too in Europe, and it was really delightful to, you know, see new currency, new buildings, and new signs.
That feeling, it makes every day not boring, and it makes it the time pass quicker.
Yeah, well, for me, I mean, the time was actually slower because I savored every minute. Every minute was more interesting when you travel to different countries and see different things. And I just found the social environment to be more friendly. But even if it was not always friendly, like in Warsaw, Poland, where people were kind of reserved, at least I didn't feel like people were looking at me and judging me, or I didn't get bad vibes. You know, people didn't seem paranoid or something.
Yeah, you might find, that's something that would be similar that you'd find between the UK and the US. Some British people do have that vibe going on. Not as much, though, as you get in the US with the judgmental attitude. But now here in Europe, I mean, I've had a few times experiences in Italy where I felt I was being judged, and they were on stupid things, so. And I was also in a smaller town, so I guess I'll give it a break on that one. The people just weren't open to foreigners as much, so.
Yeah, but I mean, it just doesn't feel as toxic. You don't feel like people are trying to tear you down or something, or bully you, you know. There's that vibe in the U.S. that, you know, people want to tear others down, and it's just too competitive, you know.
Yeah, the Americans, it's
like a social war zone.
It's not the socialism. I don't know. It just has something to do with it's that American exceptionalism, the, you know, I need to be the winner and I'm the only one who's a winner and blah, 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 you know, the lone warrior, lone ranger.
Yeah, and the big ego, too.
Yeah, and that comes from, that all feeds into each other, and Americans are too programmed to think for themselves, whereas here in Europe, they actually do think about other people.
Well, yeah, I mean, Americans are probably the most self-centered and arrogant in terms of personality. I mean,
they're extremely independent. I found, you know, that Europeans aren't as independent as Americans, but at the same time, I think it does backfire on them because they take it too far.
Yeah. Well, they're independent in different ways. Like, I see a lot of Europeans backpacking, and there's even European women traveling alone, and they're not afraid to travel alone, whereas, you know, in America, people just don't travel alone. You know, it's just seen as uncool.
Don't travel at all. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but I mean, when they do, they travel in groups and families, you know.
I remember when I lived in Kansas for a little while, and I remember when I first got there, I met this girl at the bar, and she was like, oh, you know, we were talking and just like small chit chat. And then I was like, so what do you like to do? Oh, I like to travel. I'm a big traveler. I go, where have you been? She goes, Los Angeles and Las Vegas. I go, wow, you've just been all over.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there laughing at her, you know. And she didn't know it. I mean, she was just such a ditzy dumb, you know. That's their version of traveling. So, for a Midwesterner to go to, you know, they think going to California and Las Vegas, you know, is like a big deal. And it's like, you know, I was like there, and I'm like, well, you know, I'm from California, so it doesn't, you know, you traveling to California doesn't really impress me.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You know, there's that mentality.
With a girl like that, I couldn't even have the conversation that I'm having with you because she wouldn't even know how to respond to me being over in Europe, because she doesn't even have that mind, period, to think that way.
Yeah, a lot of Americans are like that, you know. But what I was saying was that, you know, when Americans do travel, they usually do it in groups or with families. They don't travel by themselves. There's just a stigma against that.
And they usually go, they don't go that far anyways, because they don't get that much time off. But yeah, they usually go down to Cancun in groups or something. You know, it's big in American culture. Once they graduate high school or something, they go take a trip to Mexico or whatever.
Yeah, like when I drove around the Southwest and visited national parks, I mean, I was the only one traveling alone. Everyone was in some type of group or relationship or family, and you know, but in Europe, you see a lot of backpackers traveling alone, and they're confident about it. And what's ironic is Americans try so hard to be confident, but they're not confident enough to travel alone, or even to go to a movie theater alone, or even to a restaurant alone. You know, you don't really usually see people eating alone in a restaurant in America. So I'm wondering why, you know, Americans are so big on confidence, but nobody's, you know, confident enough to, you know, go to a restaurant alone or travel alone, or, you know, whereas in Europe, you know, people don't boast about confidence all the time. Like, they have to pump themselves with confidence, but, you know, they're relaxed and comfortable with themselves to the point where they're okay with traveling by themselves. You know, I've seen European backpackers even traveling in America by themselves, and Australian backpackers traveling alone too. So it's just ironic that a country that prides itself on confidence is so unconfident, you know, when it comes to being alone or something.
Well, I wouldn't label everyone. I mean, there's obviously people in America who do, but yeah, I mean, I don't know, for me, Americans seem to make a huge event out of everything, and they do make it a group thing.
Yeah, and, you know, when someone's traveling alone, they're going to be very friendly and social, and it's like a lot easier to talk to them, you know, and when people are in a group, it's like they're focused on the group, and they don't, you know, focus on anyone else, so you can't start a conversation with them as easy.
I ran into that, although there's a lot of that. Italy was kind of like that. Italy was big on social cliques and groups, and so it's not isolated to just the U.S., I don't think.
Okay, yeah, well, let's talk about your experiences in Italy, and you said you were there, what, 5 months, 6 months, or something like that?
No, I was there for a year.
Oh, a year, okay. Well, what would you say are the pros and cons of Italy? And then maybe we can talk about the food, the social culture.
Compared to what? Compared to pros and cons, like, just overall?
Yeah, overall, in general.
I have my list of cons here. You know, Public Duende won't like them, but, it, you know, I got a page long of cons in Italy. Italy isn't in a good state right now, but there's just some things that I notice as somebody who's more American going there and living there as an expat. It's a pretty hard place to expat to. It's not impossible, but it's pretty hard as far as socially and groups and stuff. The Italians I've found are kind of close-minded and kind of have this island mentality, the same as Americans. They got a lot of social cliques and that are very closed off and pretty impossible to join if you're a foreigner.
So it's not easy to meet people there, huh? Or start conversations.
No, they're big. They're kind of Latin. It's a Latin society, so it's more. It's definitely pretty cliquey and more into groups. I've heard some good things about Colombia. I've heard that you can meet, if you have decent Spanish, it's pretty easy to meet people there randomly, and they're more open. But I would think of Italy as like an old-fashioned conservative country where you can't just be a foreigner and walk up to somebody and approach them and meet them like that out of the blue.
What if somebody was sitting alone? Could you approach them and talk to them? And
I did it a few times. There was a couple girls I talked to alone, and, you know, between my shitty Italian and their shitty English, we made some conversation. They weren't creeped out like they would be in the U.S., like, I don't know, we've talked about this before, how girls in the U.S., they're just overly scared for no reason. They, you know, all of a sudden, if I've been in an airport and started talking to a girl and she gets all weirded out and it was just a normal conversation, and you're sitting there going, well, what did I say? Or do I look bad today or something? You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, in the U.S., it's kind of like a social war zone. If you approach people, especially girls, they think you're like an attacker. You're like an invader or something. It's kind of like they have that attitude.
They like, do, and they're paranoid is what it is. It's paranoia. And you see it in the... It's because the U.S. media with this, they call it the rape culture and this, every guy that's approaching you and talking to you, he's out to rape you, or he's out to steal your iPhone and purse, and it's like not true at all.
Yeah, it's like they vilify men or something, and it's like their excuse is that they're just protecting themselves, so they see every stranger, especially male stranger, as an enemy. It's like in the U.S., if you're one-to-one, people don't like to meet you. But, if you're in a group, then it's easier to meet people in another group. It's like everything in the U.S. is about groups and cliques. And...
Everything's different, dude. I've met, even in the U.S., there's still bubbly, friendly girls that you can meet. I would say, okay, then go talk to a fat chick. She might talk to you. But at the same time, I've talked to fat chicks, and they've been quite rude and mean, when approaching even them.
It just depends, That's just, what I've observed, that if you're in a group, or especially if you're with a girl, then, people are going to be more friendly to you if you're, in a group. You don't seem as threatening, as if you're alone.
Yeah, because in the U.S. culture, if you're alone, you're marked as a loser. Nobody wants that guy. Nobody wants to talk to that guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's so judgmental, I mean, it's just so stereotyping, it's like...
But that's how it is in the culture. And if you look at the movies and stuff, you don't see too many, too many winner-type characters alone all the time. They usually have people that are hanging around them.
Yeah.
Or at least a sidekick or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah, as long as they're not alone too long. But, I've just experienced that, in other countries, when I'm alone, there's not such a loser stigma. I mean, people will talk to me. I mean, this is true in Poland, in Lithuania, in Russia, in Ukraine, just in general, there's just a more positive attitude toward men and towards strangers, and especially foreigners, and there's just a much more positive attitude. Now, in Italy, so let's go back to Italy now.
Go off.
Do you have any more cons or?
Yeah, I got some more cons. They have there's a slight discrimination against Americans and other foreigners living there. They have a huge immigration problem right now. Coming usually, the most of it's from Africa, Albania, the Middle East, those other countries. Those people coming there illegally on boats or by land or wherever, and so that's been a big thing. There was some times that I got charged more for goods or services just simply by being American. This only happened in the touristy areas. There's, Italy is huge on tourism, but their tourist traps are awful. I experienced even simple things like pizza or a beer or bottled water or whatever gotten ripped off. But there's so many. I actually cannot stand the tourist cities in Italy because it's one tourist trap after another, and it just pisses you off.
Oh, so it's kind of a ripoff then.
And the fact that there's just way too many American girls there that were high on their kite, basically, because they were studying in Italy, so they thought that they were the greatest thing in the world.
Okay. Well, you said you found some girls, Italian girls, that were friendly and talkative, but I mean, they were kind of reserved, right? They didn't really go anywhere. It just
Yeah, they're friendly, and they will talk to you, and you can approach them. It's the thing is, the social key in Italy is to be introduced formally by a friend or family member or coworker or something, and that will automatically, they will pretty much gain your trust, not 100%, but to a good point where you could even, at that point, if she was single, ask for her phone number or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, you can't just go do cold approaches in Italy, or like, you know, Roosh and all these guys, day game and, you know, gaming girls at the grocery store and stuff. That doesn't work in Italy. Doesn't work at all.
Huh. What if you're a really good-looking guy? I mean...
Well, that doesn't matter. I mean, there's tons of good-looking guys in Italy.
Oh, okay. If you're a good-looking guy, you're just another good-looking guy, then.
Yeah, I would say, I don't know, most of the Italian guys are of decent good-looking. There's a few loofy-looking ones who, you know, and there's some nerdy-looking ones. But, yeah, there's not any shortage of competition, basically.
Now, is that true for all the Italian cities, or just the one you were in?
The one I was in, I didn't particularly... I mean, I don't know. I got some favorites in Italy, but I'll never live in another touristy Italian place like Florence or Venice or Rome, because the tourists just drove me insane. They're crowded, they're chaotic and dirty, and they're just not places to live. They're places that you vacation. And it's funny, actually, even here in Germany, they actually have, like, they have a word for places like Italy and Spain and Greece called Ferienland. It means vacation country. A literal translation, meaning that they don't go and live there, they just vacation there.
Yeah, some places are good to visit, but not to live, you know.
No, totally. I mean, I don't know. You like you lived in Angel City. I could never live there. It looked too chaotic and dirty, and no, I want to live in a place that's clean and organized and has a lot of resources and that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I think the best solution is to find a place that has at least most of what you want combined into one, you know. I think Eastern Europe would be good for that, you know, because it has a lower cost of living, plus it has, you know, the benefits of European culture and modern conveniences.
It depends on where. There's so many countries in Eastern Europe. There's, to tell you the truth, I wouldn't live in a country as like an ex-Soviet bloc country that wasn't westernized enough for me and, you know, just was overall shitty for everyone. There are places like, for instance, Prague, and there's places in Poland that are clean and modern, and, you know, I don't even consider them really Eastern Europe because they're basically like any other Western European city. They're not as like as post-Soviet Union as most people on the forum like to think that they are.
Yeah, and plus they aren't as expensive as Western Europe. That's what I mean. Like,
they're getting there, though, slowly.
Yeah, like I was in Latvia and Lithuania, and, you know, those were clean countries and inexpensive, and, you know...
Yeah, but at the end of this year, I think that Latvia or one of them or Lithuania is going to go on the euro.
Oh, and is that a bad thing or a good thing?
Well, that means it's going to be expensive. They're only cheap because they had their own currencies, and their currencies were devalued.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't been there in a while, you know, but, you know, that's just what I saw when I was there. And the people were very humble and modest and sweet.
I hate to say it, but in, like, probably in the next 10 years, most of those countries are just going to be in the European Union and be on the euro anyways. So I would enjoy them now while it still lasts.
Yeah. Well, one of our forum members married a Lithuanian girl there named JP.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I think last I heard, he was living there, and he said that, you know, people are very sweet and humble and very friendly there. I mean, they were almost as friendly as in Russia, but just a lot more reserved and shy. Yeah, so...
Wait, go ahead.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so going back to Italy, I mean, was it easy for you to make male friends there, too, or...?
Not really. I found most
other foreigners?
Of them were kind of into their own little lives, and every time, like, I made a male friend there, and he then had to move back to Sicily because his contract was up, you know, and I don't know. I found that in Italy, unless you grow up there, and you really can't, it's not a place that you can step into and have a social circle very easily. It's a lot of work. It's a lifetime worth of work, if you ask me.
Wow, geez.
Yeah, it's not.
It's almost like America in some ways.
Yes, it is. I mean, they grow up, you know, especially in the smaller towns. They grow up. They all know each other. You're just they look at you as some perpetual tourist, basically. Even if you're living there for a year, you know, they still treat you like a tourist or an outsider. Which was, like, disappointing, because I thought that Italians would be, like, more friendly than that. Some other things I didn't like about Italy that are on my list, let me see. Yeah, the bella figura mentality at all times to be socially accepted. Italians are very big into this. It's a mentality in Italy. It's called the bella figura, and it's basically your image, the clothes you wear, the car you drive, where you live, all of they're judgmental, just like Americans on that point of view.
Yeah, well, I heard people in Italy dress really well, and they have designer clothes and stuff. And
for me, they overdress. Like, I was, you know, in the summertime, I'd see these guys in these, like, business suits, and they're sweating their ass off, and I go, why? What does he do that's so important that he needs to wear that suit and it's 110 degrees out? I mean,
yeah,
it was just ridiculous. They take it too far. They dress up to go get a cup of coffee, and I wasn't used to that, because you know how casual Starbucks are in the U.S. I mean, people practically live in Starbucks in the U.S. and they just wear flip flops and shorts and stuff.
Yeah, and didn't you say that people try to act young their whole lives?
Yeah, they have they have like a forever young mentality, and I think it comes from all the food is just all like young people type food, like pizza and pasta and gelato, you know, and all these desserts and stuff like that. And I really do think that the food does affect everybody's mentality there. So
yeah, well, you mentioned food as one of the good things, right? Like, there's no processed ingredients, and it's very healthy.
The food in Italy is excellent. You cannot go wrong with the food in Italy. I did get a little tired of the pizza and pasta all the time, but as far as, like, the grocery stores and the quality of food from the grocery stores are absolutely excellent.
Yeah, so it's like you don't even have to go to a health food store, because the mainstream food is... already healthy.
Yeah, I was getting like Whole Foods quality type food at like Albertson Safeway prices.
Oh, hell.
Yeah, it was grocery shopping in Italy was one of the things that I always look forward to.
Wow, so could you eat all the...
Always, I mean, uh-huh. You could find everything there. The store that I went to was gigantic. It was just as modern as any other Safeway or whatever. They had all the different types of cereals, the deli, the fresh vegetable section, so there's no worries on that part.
So could you eat all the pizza and pasta you want and not get fat, or is it...
I mean I don't know, I've started a new diet now, but I think the carbs, I don't know, my body can't handle carbs past about, you know, 4 o'clock-ish. I try not to have them past 2 to 3, so maybe 4.
Yeah, so...
I think your body just doesn't have enough time from when you have them until you go to sleep to, what's it called, process it all before it turns into, you know, just sugar and fat in your stomach, basically.
Okay, so even the carbs in Italy can be fattening if you eat too much.
Well, yeah, carbs, but... as far as, like, no GMOs and stuff like that, I didn't feel like... I never felt wigged out or, like, weird after a meal like I do in the U.S., like conflicts and stuff like that.
Like sluggish, right?
Yeah, sluggish. Like in the U.S., when you go out and you have a big meal, you automatically want to go to bed because you get hit by, like, all the calories.
Yeah, there is something about food in America that just makes you tired and sluggish afterwards. I don't know if it's the calories, the sugar, the chemicals, the toxic, the processed ingredients, the toxins. I don't know what it is, or maybe, you know, it's the additives. There's just so much stuff in American food that, you know, and you just know it's just bad for you.
Yeah, I like that about here in Europe. Here in Europe, you don't have to go out of your way to eat healthy like you did in the U.S.
Yeah, in the U.S., it's hard work trying to eat healthy. I mean, there's just many temptations.
Look at the U.S., I mean, the food there is, like, go order a cappuccino at Starbucks. It's not even coffee. It's mostly milk, basically. And half of those drinks that are on the menu at Starbucks have, like, a half a day's worth of calories in them, 500 to 1,000 calories. The caramel drinks with the sugar and all the whipped cream and everything, They're just not healthy. And that's not real coffee. You know, in Italy, I got real coffee there. When I ordered an espresso, that was real coffee. It was pure coffee. It made me feel good. I got a good surge of caffeine. It wasn't loaded with sugar. And...
Oh, really? I always thought that...
Fat?
Yeah, I always thought that Starbucks was modeled after Italian coffee.
You know, Starbucks uses crappy beans from Latin America, and they dump a bunch of sugar and fat into their drinks, basically, to make them taste good. It's just cheap shit. I mean, it's like, you know, it's easy to make something taste good when you add a bunch of sugar and fat to it, but the actual coffee in Italy... You know, the beans itself, it was magnificent. I mean, a real cappuccino in Italy was, a couple espressos, basically, and you could actually taste it in a little tiny bit of foam and milk, whereas in the U.S. it's like, 80% milk and foam and then a little tiny bit of espresso and that's it, you're basically like drinking a milkshake when you order a cappuccino at a Starbucks in the U.S., or any Starbucks, basically.
Yeah, it seems like every drink in the U.S. is overloaded with sugar or something. I don't know why they have to do that. I mean, a drink can taste good without too much sugar.
No, of course. No, I have no complaints about the food in Italy. The only complaint that I had was that there's a lack of variety there as far as other foreigners going and opening up restaurants there. And I figured it out. It's because it's... Italians are so competitive with their restaurant business, pizzerias and stuff, that it's just so hard to make money at doing it there. They work for, like, you can get a big pizza for, a handmade pizza for €4, and they're only going to make, like a euro on a profit off of, that pizza.
Wow, geez. Well, at least that keeps the prices down, I mean.
It does keep the prices down because there's so many, food is a big industry in Italy, so, but it's just so hard for maybe Chinese or even Asian, other Asian people to go invest there and open up business, plus all the laws and the bureaucracy, it's pretty hard. And then there's the competition of all the other trattorias and pizzerias. It's, the prices are pretty low. They do have high-end type of places, but from what the middle of the road stuff, the food was cheap, good, and affordable, and I have no complaints about the food in Italy. The other complaints that I had were the corruption, the bad economy, and the bad politics. No jobs, some poverty is starting to go on now, and I think this is recently new in Italy. Italy's taking kind of a little bit of a GDP dive. And there's just, I don't see any light at the end of the tunnel. I see no future for Italy. And I think every young Italian now should get out while they can, or else they are going to be in for a very boring and slow life there.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, but average, you know, for young people under 35, 40, average pay is not even half what you get in a place like the U.S., the U.K., or Germany, or even other first world type countries.
Yeah, well, yeah. Wasn't it you or someone else who told me that in Italy people usually own their houses and they're not mortgaged, at least?
Yeah, Italy's a big, you know, family society, so they get a lot of their, you know, the houses and stuff are passed down through the families.
Yes, so at least they're not debt slaves to their mortgage.
They're not debt slaves, and although they have that Bella Figura mentality of, you know, they don't seem to take it to the level that Americans do with the keeping up with the Joneses and, oh, I need this, I need better this, better that. You know, faster, bigger, better, you know, bigger house, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it seems like in Europe houses are smaller, but at least they're paid off, you know, they're not debt, you know.
And they're not, like, cheaply made like they are in the U.S. The U.S., most of them are just cookie-cutter homes. You know, here, they got real, these are real old homes. I mean, the place that I'm in now is, you know, pretty old, and I would say it survived World War II by looking at the walls and everything, and it's been renovated, but these are handmade concrete walls. These aren't cheap drywall with, you know, some plaster and everything.
Yeah. It seems like in the U.S., not only is the culture artificial and inauthentic, but, you know, the houses are too, and, you know, just...
That's a good observation.
Yeah, I mean, it runs through... So what about the culture there? I mean, aren't there a lot of nice museums and Roman history and Vatican?
Well, yeah, for Italy for that, if you're looking to go for that, but how many times can you go to, you know, I've been to pretty much all the big cities in Italy and been to all those museums before, so how many times can you keep going to them?
Well, one Italian guy told me that you could go to a different museum every day in Rome for a whole year or something.
I mean, not the popular ones. I mean, I've been inside, you know, the Vatican, the St. Peter's, oh, God, I can't think of the name. You go underneath it, it's the catacombs, basically. Underneath the Vatican, there's the catacombs, and a bunch of old popes are buried there, and it was interesting, but it's, like, still, it's only, like, an hour or two worth of your day, and that's it. And once you do it, you know... You probably don't want to go do it again. The museums,
yeah,
the art, yeah. If you're a big art freak, Italy is your place to go because I think Italy's got something like 70% of the world's art is in Italy. It's something insane like that.
Yeah, and then isn't, you know, the Sistine Chapel there and Leonardo da Vinci stuff and.
Yep, I've seen it all.
Well, now you have Italian citizenship, don't you? Or
yeah.
How did you get that?
It was a long, 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 complicated process. I won't get into it too much. Basically, you got to prove that you were ethnically Italian, basically, and it's only up to a certain amount of generations that you can apply for it. I consider myself lucky. That my great-grandparents, did not renounce their citizenship when they left Italy, so when they went to the U.S.
Yeah, so even if you were not an Italian citizen, I mean, could you just stay in Italy for 3 months and then exit the country and get another visa to come back in? I mean, do people do that, or...?
You can do that. I mean, if you want to live there, the thing, it's like a pain in the ass, though. There's some other benefits to being a European citizen. It makes it easy, like, for working, a company won't even, you know, if you're only working a basic job that makes 2,000-3,000 euros a month, they're not going to go out of their way to go get you a visa. You know what I mean? You have to be in something specialized and high-end for them to go deal with the government and go get you a visa.
Yeah, so if you're not sponsored by an employer or a company, I mean, could you just live in Italy by just renewing your tourist visa every few months or something like that? Or
yeah, you'd you can get a tourist visa, but you gotta have a purpose while you're there. If you're opening up a business there, or if you're going to school there, you just can't be like perpetually floundering throughout Italy. You know, in that case, you can only stay there about 90 days, and then you'd have to leave the country, or you'd actually have to leave the Schengen zone and go to a country that's not in the Schengen zone and stay there, I think, for a month, and then you'd have to come back.
Yeah, are there a lot of expats?
It's quite a pain in the ass.
Are there a lot of expats there?
In where, in Italy?
Yeah.
No, Italy's got a huge expat community.
How do they stay there?
Only in the bigger cities, it seems like. Florence, I lived in Florence, and that seemed to be one of the biggest expat places. I don't recommend the guys on HA going to go live there at all, unless they're just really into Florence.
Hello?
Actually.
Hello? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, yeah, the call dropped for a while. What were you saying about Florence?
Oh, sorry. I don't recommend any of the HA guys go there unless they're into Florence or the art but the expats, there are a lot of American and British, Australian, Anglo expats in Florence. Not as much other Europeans, more Anglos, it seemed like. For instance, I lived in a house with four people, and actually there was another Asian guy there from the Bay Area, and he was there and he was studying sculpture. So, and he had been there for a year, and he absolutely loved Florence.
Oh, it'd be perfect if you're an art student, right?
Oh yeah, I mean, there's some of the best art schools you can go to are in Florence, art and design, that kind of thing.
And if you're an artist, could you get a job there easily, or?
No. Artists don't have jobs. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, a job as a painter or something, or, I mean, if it's an artistic culture, they must have a lot of jobs for artists, I'd imagine.
No, that's not what you think. Most of them probably, they graduate and they start working at the school or something, that kind of thing.
Okay, so
I do like Florence, though, for like a good 3-4 day getaway. I think it's quite a fun city for 3-4 days, but to live there, I don't recommend it.
Yeah, I sort of imagined that there'd be a lot of jobs for artists and stuff. And
well, there's no jobs in Italy for Italians, so I don't know that. You don't go to Italy for a job.
Huh.
Unless you're as crazy as me. Oh. So
can someone teach English there?
You could always fall back on teaching English. It doesn't pay much. The most you'll make about 800 to 1,000 euros a month. And that's about it. And you'll probably get burnt out unless you're like Ladislav and you like teaching English.
Yeah.
But I think he only teaches to like, from what I got, he goes after like big money, basically.
Well, yeah, I got that impression too.
Because doesn't he goes to the Middle East and teaches English and saves all of his money, and then goes to the Philippines for like 6 months and doesn't have to work really?
Yeah, that was his strategy for a while. Now he works in the U.S. and goes to the Philippines. But yeah, some people like to make a lot of money and then spend a lot too. And you know, it's I'm kind of the opposite. I make less, but I spend less too. So how were you able to support yourself there? I mean, did you find work or?
Yeah, I'm working online actually for an American company, helping them with account management and SEO and media stuff. So I didn't have the money problems at all. You know, just making about good enough living for now to pay rent, put some money away, take trips, and also eat well. I'm big on eating well, so I don't want to ever be, you know, not making enough money to the point where I'm not eating meat or I'm just eating, like, you know, crap food, which is hard to do in Italy, but, you know, if you're poor, you're pretty much living on pasta all the time. But no, I didn't have any money problems. It was actually kind of, it was kind of weird, though, seeing all these other people that were older than me and were struggling to find a job there in Italy. They'd be like 35, 40 years old, and they're living at home, and I met them, and they're asking me what I do, and I kind of, like, wanted to hide it because I didn't want them, like, knowing that I had a job because, you know, I didn't want them getting jealous or something. Yeah. And I had told a couple of people where, and I saw that they got kind of jealous that I was there working in Italy, and I barely knew the language, and I was still able to work online and live completely decently and take trips and stuff like that and buy stuff and not have a problem. And I think that they got a little jealous, I mean, from what I saw. Which brings me to my other point. I mean, a lot of the smart younger Italians leave. I'm not saying that everybody in Italy is dumb, but I will say that the majority of Italians that I've met outside of Italy are far better, far more educated, far more intellectual, far more well-traveled, intelligent, free thinkers, and more open than the people that you will find in Italy.
Hmm.
So that's one thing. That's interesting. You know that a place isn't worth expatriating to if all the smart people are leaving. I'll put it that way.
Yes, people have said similar things about the Philippines, too, that the most educated and smart people leave the country or something.
Yeah, it's probably true. I mean, that's probably true, too. I don't know. I haven't been to the Philippines, so...
Yeah, but, I mean, the Philippines is still really good, one of the best, for, like, getting a girlfriend, for getting dates, you know, for... You know, it's still got that as its prime attraction. From what you say, I guess Italy doesn't have that as its attraction. It's not easy to get a date there.
No, you know, nobody goes to Italy for dating or for jobs. I'll put it that way.
Uh-huh.
Some other just small side notes I had about Italy is negative. Italians are not super keen on making foreign friends. The majority of girls there's a lot of spoiled daddies, girl types of people. The bathrooms in Italy, that was a mystery to me. They have horrible bathrooms all throughout Italy, often with no toilet paper, unclean, and unsanitary. I never figured that out, why Italy had such horrible bathrooms. I probably never will.
Well,
you're probably going to have to learn Italian if you're living in Italy, unless you go stick to your expat bubble in Florence or whatever. But a majority of the Italians there are not going to know any English or have any other knowledge of Spanish, French, German, whatever.
How did you get by? I mean, do you speak Italian there?
A little bit, and I I was taking classes, and the more classes I was taking private tutor sessions with an Italian girl that I was paying like 20, 30 euros an hour, and I actually learned... I highly recommend anybody, if you're learning a language, please go get a personal tutor. You will not learn a language unless you are actually being taught the language and have somebody to talk to.
Yeah, wow, 20 euros, that's a lot for a tutor, I mean, an hour.
For an hour, yeah, it was, but it was worth it. I recommend it. There's lots of free ways to get language lessons.
There's a language exchange.
Like to practice English with me.
Yeah, there should be a language.
And even if I started the conversation in Italian, they'd switch to English because they wanted to practice their English, and it kind of pissed me off when once they found out I was an American and native English speaker. I found Italy to be kind of an Americanized society. Italy and America are kind of like good friends. The Italians are into American food, the clothes, the cars, the movies, the music, the culture. So, from what I saw, they are kind of American-type clones, type of people, kind of Americanized. For instance, it's pretty popular to see girls with, like, handbags of the American flag. Like, her handbag, her purse will be the American flag, or they wear American flag t-shirts, or like, they'll have a shirt on that says Los Angeles, or New York, or Chicago, or whatever.
Uh-huh. That kind of thing. That's pretty sad. It sounds like they have an American illusion or something.
They do have an American illusion. They don't. A majority of them haven't even been there, and I saw them wearing. I even talked to them, and they've never even been there, and they're still wearing a shirt that says Arizona State University, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I found that kind of awkward. But then again, you see, I've seen that in the U.S. where people are wearing, you know, Italy shirts or whatever, and they've never even been there either. Uh-huh. So I guess that it swings both ways.
So now, earlier you said that a lot of people were unemployed there, and it's hard to get a job there. So aren't there a lot of poor girls that, you know, are going to be looking for a guy, even a foreign guy, kind of like in Ukraine and Russia?
Italy's, just because the youth doesn't have a job, Italy is rich. Those families are rich. They are well off. You know, they're, like you said, own their house outright. They usually have a, you know, I would say most families, the older 55, 60-year-olds, they got a, you know, a couple hundred thousand euros stashed away somewhere.
Uh-huh. So it's not like Ukraine or Russia where there's a lot of poor girls looking for...
No, those girls... That country is just poor overall. It's just in Italy, it's just the youth that are poor, but they get showered with gifts and everything from their family.
Okay, so families are pretty close in Italy? I mean...
Oh, extremely close. Probably as close as you can get. I mean...
Yeah. Well, at least that's...
The economy there is...
That's better than in America, where families are not that close, you know.
Yeah, but with the economy there, in Italy, there's no new money, so I don't know how much longer they can keep, like living off their family money for. Probably one generation, that's about it.
Hmm. So were you able to make friends there, like, with other expats, or... At least,
not
or?
Really. Actually, I absolutely couldn't. The American girls there that I even talked to, I know you're probably asking, why would you talk to an American girl? Well, there was a couple that I ran into, and they were just as standoffish outside the country as they are in the U.S. So, I have one or two good friends. No, I got about three, actually, that I made. I just told you old Italian roommate, I just got off the phone with him before you called me, and we were talking for a while, and he's even wanting to leave Italy. I'm in touch with another guy that I met on the Rushvi forum, and went and had dinner with him, and then we talked for a while about Italy, and he's got his own plan together where he wants to go to Sweden, and he has a Swedish girlfriend. So I guess the Italians even do the happier abroad thing too, from what I've seen.
Hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I always pictured Italians as very passionate and very romantic, and I mean, that's kind of the image I got from their culture. Were they more so in the past, or?
I think that's just a stereotype. I think Americans have all these stereotypes. I mean, you could find... I mean, generally, yes, I would say Italy as a society is like a passionate society. You know, it's Latin-based societies, and they're all kind of like that. France, Italy, Spain.
Yeah, at least it's not soulless, you know, with no... You know, it's not like there's empty people with no soul just working and working and...
No, it's more authentic. I will say it is more authentic than the U.S., so... Mm-hmm.
Are people...
The U.S. just seems so, like... I don't know, it's just fake and everything's cheap and...
Yeah, it seems like fakeness is a part of the U.S. culture in all spectrums, across the entire spectrum of America. It's everything's just fake, you know, the people, the products, the lifestyle, the media, the food is fake, you know, food is mostly artificial in the U.S. too, and, you know, fakeness is just an integral part of American culture. Now, are Italians more down to earth, at least, or...
Yes, they're not politically correct at all. From what I saw there, they do tell things how they are, for the most part. They're not politically correct, I'll put it that way. If they're not afraid to cuss, they don't... they tell things a little bit more how they should be, instead of trying to sugarcoat it or be politically correct, that kind of thing.
Well, that's good. At least, you know, there's, if they're without political correctness, there's more free speech and more honesty. And
yeah, and I guess for my last one, just to wrap up Italy, is the insane bureaucracy that's going on right now, and it's been Italy. It makes Italy a place that's not easy to change because of all this bureaucracy. And the bureaucracy is everywhere in everything, and it's the worst I've ever seen. And I thought California was bad, but Italy took the cake as far as bureaucracy goes. So, and it stifles growth and innovation in the economy there. There are laws, there are ridiculous laws and rules.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Well, so are there any other pros, you know, good things about Italy you can name, or?
The food, the sights, the weather were all good. The scenery, the Italy's got a beautiful landscape. It's a country that has everything. It has beaches, it has mountains. It has, you got Tuscany with the rolling hills and the good weather. You got these nice coastal towns that sell fresh seafood and have beautiful sights. And you get to look at the Mediterranean. That's something that I miss a little bit. But other than that, no, not really. As far as pros, if you're really into Italian culture, the food and the language, then it might be a go for you. But if you're going there for a job, or if you don't have the means to support yourself, I don't recommend you go there, because there's a lot of Italians that are looking for jobs, and you're probably not going to find one, because they're in line first.
What about the cost of living there? Is it low or is it high?
It is decent. It depends on where. The tourist towns are insane when it comes to cost of living. Places like Rome or Venice are extremely pricey. Smaller towns are quite boring to live in. I've lived in one, and they're extremely boring to live in and have a decent cost of living and a good quality of life. Uh-huh. But you probably won't have much of a social life or nightlife.
Is it expensive to eat out, or is it cheap to eat out? Or
no, it's cheap. You go to a pizzeria and you can get a margarita pizza and a salad and a drink for under €8. You know, €6.
Uh-huh. How many dollars is that?
Oh, what is that? That's probably about, well, let me see. Yeah, about $7 to $10.
So is that the average price of a meal?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, just for a basic pizza and a salad, yeah. Oh. There's some street food type stuff.
Yeah, like a shawarma.
If you're just having a snack, you know, you just want two pieces. There's places that sell, there's a lot of street pizzeria type places that sell them by the slice. And you can eat there for €3-4. You can have two pizzas and a Coke for, yeah, probably €4 in total, which is about $5.25.
Okay. Do Italians in cafes eat really slow like French people do? Like, do they savor every
Yes, meal and... in eating in Italy is like a sport. It's got rules. You gotta have proper etiquette. It's an event, basically. So they take their food really seriously. Like, you can't even... If you go and you try to order a cappuccino past noon, they look at you like there's some... Like, that you can't do that. That's weird. Why are you ordering cappuccino past noon? That kind of thing.
Okay, and didn't you tell me the healthcare system is really good there? I mean, are you covered, or how did you get coverage?
I was covered because I'm a citizen. You can buy private insurance, or if you're working there... You're paying taxes, and it's provided by the state. So, healthcare, I've only been into one doctor there, and I thought it was pretty good compared to the U.S. It was funny, there wasn't all this insurance paperwork, you know, like you get in the in the U.S., when you go to the doctor, you gotta fill out, like 20 forms just for them to see you. Yeah. Like, that didn't exist. It was, like, instantaneous, made an appointment, saw the doctor as soon as I walked in.
What if you're not an Italian citizen? Can you still get health insurance, or what can you do then?
Yes, there's several private insurers there in Italy. They're not expensive. You can get it for about 70 to 100 euros a month, depending on your conditions or whatever. But yeah, it's pretty cheap and affordable.
What if you just walk in without an appointment and just pay directly with no insurance?
There's doctors that you can go to and pay cash.
Yeah, I mean, is that pretty pricey or?
No, I mean, depends on what kind of specialist you're going to, but it depends on the scenario. I mean, there's tons of different scenarios.
Just like a regular checkup or something, if you're sick or something like that.
If you're sick and what, need antibiotics?
Yeah, or you just need to check up something.
Pay about 60 euros if you're sick and need antibiotics, just to go and talk to him and him diagnose you.
Okay, so a clinical visit might be 60 euros or something. And
yep, if you need some antibiotics or whatever, that's about what you need. So,
well, would that include the antibiotics, or would they?
No, they get a prescription and take it to the pharmacy, and then they. The medicine there was cheap. I got antibiotics because I had a root canal done there and I needed to take some antibiotics, and it was nothing. It was like 4 euros for the antibiotics.
Okay, so it's cheaper than the U.S. then?
No, it's way cheaper than the U.S. Everywhere's cheap. When it comes to medical, everywhere's cheaper than the U.S.
Okay. Yeah, I wish more Americans would know about that so they'd see that America is not necessarily the best place to live.
I think that in the U.S., everybody's, like, ripping each other off, it seems like.
Yeah, it seems like everything is overpriced, now, especially nowadays.
Because, like, everybody's ripping each other off there. The doctors are ripping off their patients. You know, there's just, like, it seems like there's not as much fairness as it used to be 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like the greed is just out of control. I mean, it's just a part of life. I mean,
yeah, but okay. I don't know what's going on.
There's no balance in the U.S. Everything's just run by greed.
I don't know if it will get worse or if it will get better, but either way, it's not the place for me.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, I'm done bashing Italy and I'm done bashing the U.S., so...
Yeah, okay, well...
I don't want to turn this into a bashing session.
Well, no, it's very informative. I mean, the stuff you say is really interesting about Italy, and, you know, it's better for someone to know in advance, you know, than to find out the hard way, you know.
That's why I'm here. I'm here to give information.
But I still think Italy's a great place...
That's why I like Happier Abroad, because we're the only community that provides real information, and it's based off of experiences and people that actually lived in these countries.
Yeah, without the politically correct sugarcoating and whitewashing, and, you know, I like that you tell it as it is without any sugarcoating or whitewashing, you know, or...
That's how it should be.
You know, that's what truth is, you know, truth is truth.
It's not like, you know, it's not like the other websites out there like Roosh, where it's like 100% about women in game and all this stuff that's wrapped up to sell another ebook. You know, you're not out there peddling ebooks like Roosh does. You'd rather provide good, useful information without bugging somebody for $2 extra.
Yeah, and
I feel that's the biggest turnoff when a website does that. You know, they're holding back information just to get that $2 out of you, and it's like, it can't be worth that much if you're only selling it for $2 or $5. So the information can't be anything special, because if it were special, you'd be selling it for a couple $1,000, not for $10.
Yeah,
or $5.
Well, I heard he sells a lot of ebooks, from what I've heard. So I don't know what his game plan is or how he works, but. Yeah, it just seems like a strange site. You know, I like to, I like people to tell the truth, you know, the pros and the cons, because that's life. You know, every place has pros and cons and negatives and positives. And, you know, I don't understand why most travel websites and travel books and travel TV shows only focus on the positives and never the negatives.
Well,
you know,
they're produced by American producers and American content creators.
Yeah, and they just keep everything positive, and that's, you know, obviously.
Of course, nobody wants to hear the bad things about Italy. They want to keep this romantic view of Italy inside their head. But the reality is, when you go there and you live there, you're going to encounter problems that you, as a tourist, didn't have.
Yeah, and plus, you know, if the media is sponsored by the travel industry, they're going to, you know, keep everything positive anyways. You know, and politically correct, and so. You know, I love hearing the pros and cons because it's so realistic, it's so genuine, you know, it's much more credible when you are willing to say the positives and the negatives and be fair. You know,
how I like to deliver.
It's so authentic, yeah. So maybe now we can talk about Germany. So you moved to Germany after Italy, right? And maybe you can tell us about that.
Not just Germany, but in Berlin, which is my favorite city in Europe. In Western Europe, anyways. Uh-huh. I think Berlin is an absolutely awesome place to live. It's not as, like, romantic or stylish or picturesque as Italy. But it's a lot of fun. I think especially for guys that are under, 45-ish, 40, I think it's good. I wouldn't want to be here if I was 70 years old. It's just, moves fast and there's a lot of things going on. You know, when you're 70 years old, you probably want to be in a place like Italy, to tell you the truth, that moves slower. They have this joke in Italy, what's that? Isn't it there's a movie called There's No Country for Old Men?
Uh huh.
And I was talking to this Italian, he goes, Italy is the only country for old men. And it was pretty funny how you put it that way, because it's true. Because the lifestyle, Italy is a very slow place, and it's, big on good food, and it's a slower lifestyle, and it's really relaxed. But it's not really happening. It's not a happening place for people, under 30 like me to be.
Okay, so you're under 30. I mean, wow, you're very down to earth and very knowledgeable for someone in their 20s. I mean.
Yeah, I'm in my late 20s, but no, Berlin, to me, is one of the best places in Europe, one of the best cities right now. It's, the prices are good for a capital city. You can rent here for, anywhere from 250 euros a month up to 500 euros a month. I'm paying about 490 right now, which is the equivalent of, $600? And I'm just renting a room. I got one roommate. I like the district. I'm in one of the better districts.
So what does it have over Italy? Is it friendlier? I mean, what's the social culture like?
The social culture is good here. It's very open. It's very international. It's very friendly. You do not need knowledge of German for most things. There's some things that you'll need them for, but compared to Italy, everyone here speaks conversational English, and they enjoy speaking English for some reason. I don't know why, but they do.
Is it easy to meet people there?
Very easy. I've met a couple people already. I wish I've had more time to go out, but as far as it depends on what kind of people you want to meet and where, but here culturally, they're open to meeting new foreigners compared to Italy.
Wow, that's great. I mean, and didn't you say there was a lot of work in Berlin? It was easy to get a job, or?
Berlin's got the higher unemployment, but Germany overall, compared to Italy, you can't compare. I mean, Germany's unemployment overall, I think, is like 6.2% or something unemployment, and I think in Italy it's like 12 or 13, and then for youth, the youth unemployment in Italy is huge. It's like, it's something like 45% or something like that. So one in two people are unemployed. Here in Germany for youth, there's a lot more stuff for younger people, and I would say that the youth unemployment is a lot lower and probably at like 12 to 13%. There are a lot more international companies here. Finding work here is much easier than in Italy. I'll put it that way.
Wow, and you have statistics too. I mean, you must be very well read.
This is part of the reason why Italy is so messed up is because of the economy. But now Germany is doing all right compared to the rest of the Eurozone countries.
Mm-hmm. What kind of jobs are available in Berlin? I mean, for people, for foreigners?
Pretty much everything. You can find anything from software jobs to low-end bar jobs to whatever.
And they're available to Americans too?
It would be harder, but it's, yes, if you have some kind of skill, there are a lot of German companies that are willing to basically get you a visa if you have the right skill set or something that they're looking for.
Yeah, but you have the ideal position where an American internet company pays you and lets you work overseas. I mean, how can someone get a job like that? I mean, that must be the ideal situation.
I looked online here in Europe. I found this job on Craigslist, but there's a ton of stuff out there just to make a living. If you want to make just a living wage, that's easy. I mean, that's not hard at all. And what I make is decent money. It was definitely really decent for Italy. By German standards, it's not as impressive, but by Italian standards, it was pretty impressive. So, but there's stuff out there if you're willing to put in the time and effort to go job search and find something, and if you have the right skill set.
Yeah, I think a lot of happier abroaders would like that. They want to live overseas and have a job, you know, with an American company.
The thing is, I've told most of these guys, you got to come over here first. I came here jobless, and you have to not be scared to do that.
Oh, so you went to Italy without the job?
Yes, I went to Italy without a job.
Oh, and then you went to Craigslist and found it? I mean,
I know that sounds weird, but it's true. It was posted here in the Berlin Craigslist, so there's tons of stuff, though. I mean, I could have even worked. There's places I could have worked in Italy, but this paid more, and it allowed me to work from home.
Mm-hmm. Were you just lucky? I mean, is that easy to do? Because Craigslist is usually, like, the bottom of the barrel, I heard.
You know, it's surprising what you think and what actually is true. Because I've found lots of great stuff off Craigslist. Now, I'm not saying every job that I've had I found off Craigslist, but yeah, I found it kind of weird too that I found a decent gig off of Craigslist. I found that pretty weird too. But they are out there.
Hmm. So, well, that's good to know,
These happier, broader guys, if they're all worried about a job, they need to not, when you're going overseas, you're not going to have everything figured out. You're supposed to go there and figure it out. They're trying to skip a step and take shortcuts. And I noticed that Americans are like that. They're like the shortcut kings, and they want to have, you know, the job and everything all figured out before they go there. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work that way.
Well, can't they go on Craigslist first before going overseas and
getting the job
first?
Once you get in the interview, you know, I needed to be here in Europe for my job because I have to be on the same time zone. Mm. So, and honestly, most of the companies, if they get your CV and you have a foreign address on it, they're probably just going to throw it in the trash.
Well, can't they just interview you on the phone or on Skype or something like that? Or
no, they want somebody on the same time zone, right? They want somebody that they know is going to work out, and they don't want to waste their time.
Oh, they want you to. They want to make sure that you're serious and that you're there.
Because,
yeah.
I think I read a statistic online that for every job post, doesn't matter where on any site, the average number of CVs and resumes they get for every job posting is something like 80 to 120.
Right.
So it's competitive out there everywhere.
Yeah,
everywhere.
But by being there, you look more credible to that employer.
That's what I tell guys. You know, it shows that you don't, like, have one foot in the door and one foot. They're not going to hire you overseas because they want to start training right then and there, and they want to know you're going to work out.
Yeah, and then they want you to show up the next day at the office or something to talk to you and stuff. And
they just don't want to make a bad... Okay, you got to think how a company doesn't want to waste all the money and time training somebody and have them not work out because that costs them a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, do you need special skills? What if you're just computer literate and have basic education? Is that enough? Or?
Yeah, there's stuff here for you in Germany. I would say more so here in Germany than the rest of Europe. I would think Germany, the UK, maybe Sweden or a couple other Nordic countries are good places to go look for a job. And, you know, if you're going to live in Spain or Greece or Italy, you're going to be pretty limited because of the bad economy and your skill set. You're not going to have the local language, so you're going to be limited to hostel jobs or also teaching English or maybe other kinds of things. Now, somebody like you, you can go your location, you could go live in Italy for, you know, 3 months or whatever, but then you got to figure out the visa deal. You can't just be there.
Yeah, I can, but I don't think most people can just start an internet business. You know, they probably have to rely on some type of employment.
Yeah,
with somebody.
But even then, I mean, you couldn't even stay there for anything past 3 months. So it's the even. So then you think about the visa ordeal, and that's another barrier.
Yeah,
you'd have to go apply at a school and go back to school and pretend to be in school and get a student visa.
Well, I heard that a lot of Americans just, you know, who live in Europe, a lot of Americans, when their visa runs out, they just take the bus to a neighboring country and then renew their visa and then come back or something.
No, you can't do that. It's all one Schengen zone. You can't be in Italy and then go to France and your visa is automatically renewed and you can go back to Italy. It doesn't work that way. You have to be outside the Schengen zone for 30 days.
You mean outside the European Union? Or?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I heard you could do that in some countries, I heard, like in Lithuania and Latvia.
Not anymore, I think. Not anymore since they've joined the European Union and they're on the Schengen zone. There's still some countries that aren't. The Ukraine is one of them. Let me see, let me pull up a map. I mean, every year the European Union is growing. You'd have to go pretty far east. Ukraine, Belarus, Moldova, maybe in some of these former Yugoslavian countries like Albania or Bosnia. Any of those ones, you'd have to go there. And they're pretty cheap. I haven't been there yet to those former Yugoslavian countries. I don't really have an interest in going there. I'll probably check out a few of them, but...
Mm-hmm. So do you find Germans to be pretty open-minded and down-to-earth? I mean, are they...
I find Berliners to be open, very open-minded, and very down-to-earth. I've been in other places in Germany.
Uh-huh. They don't act fake or anything like that?
Smaller towns in Germany are not the greatest places on the planet. I don't particularly like Munich. Some people like Munich. I don't really like the culture there. And I didn't find the people there friendly. But yes, Berliners are cool, hip, open, friendly, international people.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've stopped over at the Frankfurt airport several times, and the people there look really grouchy and unfriendly.
No, no, Frankfurt's horrible. I hate that city. Don't, you know, that's on like there's cities that I hate, and Frankfurt and Paris are at the top. No, I don't like Frankfurt at all. It's cold. It is business. It's a business. It's a banker city. So it's where the European Central Bank is. A lot of banks and investment companies and stuff like that.
Yeah, but when you go into a bank, I mean, at least they're supposed to smile. But you know, at the Frankfurt airport, people don't even smile. I mean, they just seem very unfriendly and cold. I mean, usually a customer service person is at least going to smile. You know, even in the U.S., a customer service person at a bank is going to smile too. You know.
No, I'm not a fan of Frankfurt at all in any way, and I don't recommend, unless you are looking for a job in that industry, I don't recommend anybody go there.
Yeah, I didn't know one German city and another could be so different.
Oh God, yeah. Germany is extremely diversified throughout the north, the southeast, and the west. So it's different everywhere, just like in the US. Cities are different. The culture here in Berlin is extremely relaxed. I like it a lot because it reminds me of the relaxed, like, California culture, which is something that it was a part of the California culture that I like because it's so relaxed with the way that people dress and how open and friendly they are. You can approach them. They're very international. They'll talk to you. They'll be interested in you.
Yeah, this goes against the norm because Berlin is the capital, right? And usually the capital city is less friendly than the other cities. I mean, that's true in
Usually, yeah,
Poland
and
too.
usually capital cities are the most expensive cities, but here in Berlin, because of the wall falling and all the history, you know, the World War II history, I think Berlin was held back for a while. And like Munich is probably 30, 40% more expensive than Berlin.
Yeah,
So,
so that's different from the norm. I mean,
yeah, I mean, so, okay, salaries in Munich are higher, but still, the rent is higher there, the groceries are higher, going out is higher, prices.
yeah, because if you go to Poland, I mean, the capital city of Warsaw is considered the least friendly city in Poland. I mean, people are just kind of re very reserved and not as easy to meet or talk to. Whereas in other cities in Poland, they're a lot more friendly, in my experience.
It's completely true.
So it just seems to defy the norm.
I mean, but no, Berlin for me is an awesome city. It's a great base. I'd like to tell some of the other HA people that it is a great base for traveling in all throughout Europe, Eastern Europe, or exploring the rest of Germany if you want to, or even going up to Amsterdam, the Netherlands, wherever. But there's two airports here. Flights are cheap. You can go. I was looking the other day, and I was looking. There was flights to Lisbon, Portugal, and they were like 22 euros each way. You know, you can travel here for pretty cheap. You could take a train into Poland. There's trains that go directly, bullet trains that go directly into Poland, going, you know, a couple hundred miles an hour, and they're only 30 euros each way. You can go to, I want to go to Poland. I want to go to Prague. I want to go to Prague too in October, when it's fall. So I'm looking forward to that too. And you can go there for only about 30 euros, and I think it's like 4 hours and 30 minutes each way.
So what about like the women in Germany? I mean, are they, I mean, do they like dating American guys or?
Yeah, from what I've seen, the Berlin women are great. They're, as far as open goes, they're really open. I've gone out a few times and met a few randomly. They're not, unlike Italy, they're not in big groups with guys, and they are friendly and approachable. They speak conversational English. You can, they're a little too liberal for me. in a different way than liberal American. They're, when I mean liberal here, I mean like they're very loose on drinking and sex, and they, a lot of them do have tattoos or piercings or dyed hair. So if you're not, if you don't like that, then this probably isn't the place for you.
Yeah, I
yeah, like you have some forum members like this czar, you know, who's looking for some Eastern European princess virgin. I don't know what the hell he's looking for. And no, that wouldn't, you know, a guy like that, well, I, you know, he's not going to go anywhere anyways, but he wouldn't like it here. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I've met a lot of German tourists, and, you know, there's a lot of German females that backpack around the world, and, you know, I got the sense that, that they were very down-to-earth, too, but also that they were very...
A lot of them are extremely educated. The other thing I like about German girls versus maybe Italian, or even versus some American, is they're independent, and they are smart. They do... They have money. They have their own job. If you're looking for one of those types of girls... Germany's not a bad place at all. They're not cliquey. They are open to dating foreigners.
Yeah, but I mean, how do you date them? I mean, it's, I guess it's easy to talk to them, you know, as a friend or you know, platonically. But I mean, can you flirt with them? I mean, how do you, like, court them?
Like, well, what do you do? Just look through your Rouge V manual and he'll tell you.
Oh, you mean you, like PUA and game and...
No, I'm just joking. they're German girls, very down to earth. It's just striking up a conversation with them and then asking for their phone number or...
Yeah, but you know, a lot of cultures are very friendly in that the women will socialize with you, but it doesn't mean that, you know, it's, you know, that they want to date you. That's a different... type of ball game, you know.
I would say overall here in Germany, the girls here don't have any qualms with dating a foreigner. I found in Italy they were a little bit more, the idea that they were more traditional in Italy and conservative, the idea of dating a foreigner just freaked them out, you know. So,
yeah.
No, I think Germany is very modern, international, in that sense, then they would probably enjoy it, the dating a foreigner guy.
Well, okay, so they're independent, but not to the point where they believe that they don't need a guy, kind of thing.
No, that's like an American. There's no, I don't even know where that comes from, because that has nothing to do with being independent. Well, what does, you know, being with a man, being independent mean? Why only in America did they make that weird conclusion?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, it's part of the...
Because you're not married, all of a sudden you're independent? That makes no sense. I mean, it has nothing to do with... One has nothing to do with other. You get married, you know, you get married because you love someone, and, you know, not having a man does not make you any more... What, so you don't have a man, but you rely on your parents or whatever to help you out? Or friends, you're not independent, you know.
Yeah, well, there's this myth in some parts of feminism in America that a woman should not need a man and to be self-sufficient. You know, it's this, I don't know, it's just bizarre. You know, because people need other people. People need love, you know, and I don't know why some groups in America try to change that and try to make it like... You know, men are bad and women don't need men and they should just be... I guess it's an extreme form of feminism, you know. It's, you know, America just likes to tear people down, and it's just a socially hostile place in that sense. What about that reputation that German women like black men? I mean, do you find that to be true, or it's a paradise for black men, or...
No, that's not true. I was laughing at Rock when he said that, and I don't know, he doesn't really have any experience with Germany, and I thought that was kind of naive for him to say that. No, I don't think showing up here and being black, you're going to, like, have a million girls all around you and be some kind of rock star. there are plenty of German black guys, there's plenty of American black guys here, and there's plenty of Africans here. So no, showing up and being black is not going to, like, give you some kind of rock star status.
Well,
like,
I think Rock was saying that there's a subset of German women that do like black guys, a certain niche.
Yeah, but that subset is everywhere.
Uh-huh. It is not any higher than in America or in England or...
No, I don't think so, no. It's not any... It's no different.
Yeah, well, you know, if there's a stereotype or a reputation, usually it's based on something. I mean, it's kind of like where there's smoke, there's fire. It's usually based on something real.
Some people make this stuff up. I don't think, you know, German girls are completely open to dating a black guy, but I don't think coming here and being black is going to get you... You know, it's not, you're not going to get some special German pussy pants.
Kind of like there's this myth that Swedish women are blonde and loose and very, very
it's
sexual and easy.
I hit on a girl at a hostel when I was younger, about 21, and tried, you know, sleeping with her, and she wasn't blonde. First off, she was a brunette, and with the darker eyes, and no, she didn't want to. She, you know, didn't want to sleep with me, basically. So, no, they're not all loose and, you know, like everybody thinks they are.
Yeah, I don't know where those myths come from, you know. Sometimes it's...
One guy travels to one country and has one experience, then writes it on the internet, and then blows it up into this thing, and then it becomes this, like, you know, little mythical fable that he told, internet fable. And just like the rest of the stuff that this Roosh guy writes, and everybody actually believes it just because they're sitting around doing nothing at their parents' house, you know, not traveling themselves.
Yeah, have you talked to other black guys in Germany and asked them if it was true, or?
No, I mean, but I've been to Germany dozens of times and now lived here for a good couple months, so I think I have a good understanding of what I mean. Sure, you could find that different subset like you were talking about that like black guys, but I don't think just showing up here and being black is gonna get you anything special.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what the black guys there,
like Irizarry. I was talking with Irizarry the other night. He talked about the girls who are bro lovers. Okay, those probably do exist here just like they exist in the US, but he mentioned to me as a black man that he doesn't want anything to do with the bro loving type of women, the women that are only after you just because you're black.
Are those women lower quality or something, or
what's that?
Are the women there that are specifically looking for black guys, do they tend to be lower quality, or the bro loving guys, I mean the bro loving women, or
the quality varies, I mean, just like it does in the US.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to get a black guy's perspective that's there on that.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I meet one, you know, I haven't met one or befriended one yet. Maybe I'll meet another American guy or maybe an Australian or a British black guy. I don't know, and I don't know, get their opinion on it. But as far as I know, it's pretty...
Yeah,
it's not like you think it is.
What I heard is that, I mean, to meet girls there, you pretty much have to go there and meet them because they don't usually post profiles on dating sites. You know, I heard in Europe, like, the women don't post profiles on dating sites. They usually just go out and meet people, you know.
What are you talking about? There's tons of German dating sites.
Yeah, I don't know. Some German guy told me that... You know, starting a dating site in Europe is not going to go anywhere because people usually just go out and meet people and they don't...
It's just like, I just told you, it's the same thing with the jobs. The same thing goes with the internet dating. You can't be overseas and have some girl here that you're talking to online actually take you seriously. It just doesn't work that way. You have to be here. It's just like with jobs.
Well, I mean, people who usually go on dating sites are usually doing it because they don't have many opportunities to meet people, you know, outside, you know, in real, everyday real life. you know, that's what I would imagine. So if it's easy to meet people in Germany, I'd imagine people don't have any need for dating sites, right?
What do you mean?
No, I mean, like, people who go on dating sites and post a profile, they usually do it because they're not meeting enough quality people in real life. So, you know,
they're looky-loos.
Yeah, or so if there's a great social scene in Germany where you can go out and meet people easily, then you probably don't need a dating site.
Not all of Germany. You keep referring to all of it. Berlin is special. Berlin is a special place in Germany that is a very open, international, social type of place.
Okay, yeah.
Compared to small towns here. You can go. I guarantee any guy here on the forum, if they came here to Berlin and they went out for 2 hours to a beer garden, and you approach people, I guarantee you, you will find somebody, an attractive girl there that will want to talk to you. I absolutely guarantee it. You would have to be absolutely hideous for them not to talk to you. But you know, German girls are not superficial and. You know, concerned about looks as much as when they're going out. They just want to have a good time and good conversation and meet new people. And if you look at the way a beer garden is set up, it's not set up in with these little tiny circle type tables where everybody sits in a little circle group. They're these big long like park bench type tables where everybody's sitting and drinking beer and conversing, or they're walking around meeting new people. And you look at that and you think the way the place is designed, it's not like a nightclub where you'll have these little tiny circle tables and you have your little circle group and you order your, you know, expensive bottle of vodka or whatever, and you only sit in that group and you don't meet anyone.
Yeah, that sounds a lot more inclusive. What you're describing.
Yeah, it's a little more inclusive that way, but here I think, like, you know, the beer gardens is a good example of, in German culture, of them being more sociable and able to meet people just based off the way the whole place is laid out.
So there's plenty of women that don't have guys with them that you can just talk to and...
Yeah, and there's tons of cafes, you know, they can go out to. I'm starting to get into meetup.com, like you suggested. I was looking there and subscribing to some groups that there's so many, because Berlin's got 4 million people. There's everything. I even sent you one. You know, you said that you went to this vegan meetup group, and there's one just like that here.
Yeah, I recommended that if you go to meetup.com that you try to go to the vegetarian groups or
Cooking Vegan Berlin, and it's got 104 people, and you look on it and there are tons of attractive girls.
Well, yeah, because the girls there are going to be more health conscious, and so they're going to look better and be thinner. You know, either, you know, a vegan vegetarian group or a natural health. You know, the women who are into natural health are going to look healthier. So. So that's definitely a good way to, you know, meet people. And also you can go to couchsurfing.org, and they usually have meetups in every major city, too, on couchsurfing.
Yeah,
that
I'm
is
not,
too.
I'm not big into the couchsurfing thing, and I don't know. For me, I think a meetup group would be more proper. Some guys might like the couchsurfing thing, but meetup.com's got some, because Berlin's so big and diversified and international. You can find anything there, and it will help you with everything from dating to work to, you know, your personal life, whatever.
Wow.
So, but no, you can find here. I was searching this Cooking Vegan Berlin. I was searching the members, and here's a girl. There's one girl here that's from. She says that she's Brazilian vegan and living in Berlin, and she's an attractive girl and. You could do, because Berlin's so international, and I don't really know why all these people come here, because there's not as many. I don't know what's the attraction, but it's more of a bohemian hippie hippie type city and kind of bohemian, and it's, I guess maybe because it's cheap too, and it's such a big city with the Berlin's got an awesome infrastructure. There's several tram lines, several regional trains that are extremely clean. They're fast, they're cheap, so it's easy for me to go. I can go across the entire city. It'll take me about 30 minutes and only cost me about $3.50.
Okay.
You know, not even the price of an all-day ticket is not even, the cost of a gallon of gasoline in California.
Oh. So do you ride the bus there every day or the train or...
Not the bus. They have an above-ground tram that's fast, and they got an street-side tram that's fast, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard that the cops there are pretty mean. Is that true? Or?
No, that's complete myth. Where'd you hear that from?
Well, Germany has a reputation for mean cops, and you know, people have told me that too, and
who?
Friends and other travelers, that the police are strict and about laws. And
you know where the police are mean? You know where the police are mean? The U.S. I think those are the worst cops on the planet. Look, you know, every other day, somebody's getting shot and killed by the U.S. police, normal people.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the U.S. police don't usually bother me. I mean, I don't speed or break any laws usually, but... I mean, Germany is supposed to be a strict, orderly society, you know, or something. Or...
No. They're extremely lenient here in Berlin.
Yeah, well, maybe that's outside of Berlin. In other cities, it's like that.
I've never had problems with the police anywhere in Germany. They're pretty lenient.
Do they walk around with guns or anything like that, or?
They have guns, but they're just, you know, regular handguns like you'd see in the U.S. They're not, like, armed head to toe with, you know, a semi-automatic rifle or anything like you see in the U.S. They don't, like, harass people over peddly little shit like jaywalking or, you know, littering and stuff like that.
Wow, well, this is really interesting. I mean, I didn't know, you know, Berlin was such a great city and so bohemian.
No, Berlin's the best city in Europe right now.
Yeah.
Hands down, I would say, if, you know, you should come here just even for a week.
I mean,
there's so much shit to do here that even a week won't.
Yeah,
you won't even, it's like a spit in the bucket as far as touching the amount of what this city has to offer.
I mean, there's bohemian towns in the U.S. too, but they're usually small towns, not cities.
Where? Where's a bohemian town?
Well, like Ashland, Oregon, or Austin, Texas, or Taos, New Mexico. Those are supposed to be bohemian towns too, but they're small towns.
They're small little communities though.
Yeah, and they're still kind of cliquish, even if they are bohemian.
Yeah, they're not, here it's very international here, and they're used to, you know, I was in the grocery store the other day, and, you know, turned around, there was a couple there speaking Italian, and I've been walking down the street, and I hear people speaking Spanish, or French, or, you know, the Australians, you know, here, I see there's so many foreigners here.
Yeah, and, you know, I heard that Germany...
I think it's good socially, because... Mm-hmm. When no one's from here, that means that they don't have these long embedded roots like I saw in Italy, of, you know, friendships for 10, 20, 30 years or whatever.
Yeah, you know,
so I think it's easier to meet people in a place like Berlin.
Yeah, that's really good to know. And I also heard that, like, the red light district in Germany is really good and too, like... Like
they
it's really,
have, yeah.
Like I mean, it's a really Germans, good value or something.
I told you, Germans are really loose with sex. They're extremely. It's the prostitution is legal here. The other night, I was on the. I was actually at the bar. Like this was like 2 weeks ago, and the TV. I was looking at the TV, and all of a sudden a sex ad came on, and the it wasn't even like a like a you know, in the US you see those erotic hotline, they remember they used to be popular in the 90s, the in the 80s probably, the erotic hotline type deal.
Oh, the 900 numbers?
Yeah, those, you know, call a girl up and talk to her bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
Now, ever since, like, the internet and everything, that's not really popular anymore. But I saw a commercial the other day that came on, and it was this sex ad. And it was, the girl was, it was like hardcore porn playing at the bar. And I was just amazed. And I was like, you would never, even though it was like 12 o'clock at night, I said, you would never see this on the TV in the U.S. There's just, there's publication standards. They wouldn't be able to play it. It's, you know, it was like freaking porn, and it was out in public. And I thought it was kind of weird how loose Germany as a society is about sex.
Wow.
And they're very, they're just that kind of stuff. They're open. There's brothels. There's street prostitution. They're extremely open. The brothels here, they're not even called brothels. They're called these FKK clubs. And there's like the biggest one here in Berlin, and it's like, I think for guys it's like an all day event for them to go, because I looked at the website and it had like a gym and a movie theater and a swimming pool. And like they do like a lunch buffet, and like they have a full bar there, and it was like, I think it's like here in Germany it's seen as like it's like a wellness type club, like you get massages too if you want, that kind of thing. So it's pretty interesting.
Wow.
The way that they take the stuff.
It's like a resort or something. I mean, well, what about the price and the value? I mean,
what do you mean?
No, I mean, of the red light districts there, I mean, the prices, the value,
it's,
I mean...
No, it varies. I mean, if there's high-end escorts that are charging maybe 400 to 600 euros an hour, and then there's the bottom-of-the-line girls start at about 50 euros, and then you have everything else in between.
Hmm. So it rivals the red light district in Amsterdam too, then.
I think the red light district in Amsterdam is pretty disgusting, to tell you the truth. I have visited Amsterdam a couple times and stayed at a hostel there in the red light district, and I found it disgusting with all the Africans selling drugs there on the streets, the constant piles of puke that you'd have to step over because, you know, some British stag party, they drank too much, and, you know, they puke on the streets.
Wow, that's gross.
You know, people piss on the streets, and now Germany is much cleaner than that. It's not that kind of party city, I'll put it that way, as Amsterdam.
So Germany is cleaner then, and
I mean, it's one of the cleanest. This is the cleanest big city I've ever been in, with no crime. I mean, little to no crime, no guns. It's not like Chicago. I think Chicago's got record murder rates for what's it called, the city. And I know here in Germany, I think like there was this statistic I was looking up, and I think like German police officers last year only fired like 360 bullets, and I think like in the U.S. there were like something like 6,000 or 8,000 gun homicides.
So, yeah, the U.S. does have a very high homicide rate.
Extremely high compared to, and the police here only fired like 360 bullets for the entire year. That's probably what one department would do in one city.
Wow, that's interesting. So, what about the visa laws there? I mean, how long can a foreigner stay?
90 days, same as the rest of Europe.
Okay, so you just get a 90-day tourist visa then. Could you just take a bus outside the European Union and then come back or something like that? Or
you gotta be outside for 30 days. You can't just like go there and touch the ground and then come back. No, it doesn't work that way.
Oh, so this 90-day thing, it applies to the entire European Union, not just Germany, then?
Yes, of course. It's the European Union. It's the Schengen zone. So you'd have to go.
Oh.
Leave. You can go to the Ukraine or whatever and go hang out there for 30 days, although I wouldn't recommend it with the current war that's going on right now.
Well, couldn't you just...
I don't care what Mark Davis says, it is dangerous to go there, and I don't recommend people going there. And there is bad stuff that's brewing right now, and it is getting worse from what I've seen.
No, well, he claims the danger is only in certain areas and not in his area. That's what I heard, but...
That's like saying, I don't know. It's still...
Yeah, I mean, it's still unstable, you know?
You know, it's like, okay, the shooting is over on this part of the store, so you could stay over here on this other side of the store, but you never know what's going to happen at the same time.
Yeah, well, I haven't studied the situation there, but I mean, I guess I would be kind of apprehensive about going to Ukraine, but what about just going across the Black Sea to, like, Egypt or the Middle East or Israel or something?
Yeah, there's tons of places.
There's Turkey.
Tons of places that you can go.
Turkey or even to Russia.
Turkey you can go. Turkey's safe. I have a lot of friends that have gone to Turkey and they love it.
Like, they go there for 30 days and then come back and something like that?
Yeah, those countries are even... I mean, I've always wanted to check out Albania. I think looks like a pretty cool country, and that's extremely cheap to go there. The costs there, even if you're, it would be way cheaper than staying in even Germany.
Yeah, or even you could even go to Egypt and see the pyramids or something. I mean, just
there's a ton of you got a bunch of countries that are not on the Schengen zone. You can go to Serbia, where else? Belarus. The Ukraine, like I said, Moldova.
Yeah, or Russia.
Or you can go to Russia if you want. You'd have to get a visa for that. You can't even step foot inside Russia without a visa.
Oh, yeah, I know that. You could just apply for one at a travel agency and
I don't think Russia's dangerous right now for Americans to go to. I just don't think you should be in the Ukraine, period.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with you being American or somebody being Italian or somebody being British. It's just it's a war zone kind of right now on that bottom the bottom area that's towards the Black Sea, and who knows if it's going to spread and how fast it's going to spread. And they had that Malaysian airline flight that was going from Amsterdam to Malaysia and it got shot down. Why would you want to even take a train into or a plane even into the Ukraine?
Huh. Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, that's just...
I wouldn't recommend, you could go to Turkey's Istanbul. I wouldn't recommend going near the border of Syria or anything. Georgia or Armenia, I don't really know too much about those countries, so I'm not going to say anything. But no, there's options out there.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess you could just go to another country for 30 days and then come back to the European Union. Or
you find a job here and get a work visa. Or there's a million. The European Union's got dozens of different types of visas that they offer. I think you could... You could even take... I think you could get a business visa and, like, open up a little German company. It wouldn't cost you that much. It would cost you, like probably 400 euros or whatever, and say that you're running Happier Abroad in Germany, and they'll give you a business visa for that.
Huh.
But you're going to have to pay taxes on the money. You can go for a year. You can go to school here, even if you're just taking a couple classes or whatever, you can get a student visa.
Yeah, so does your Italian citizenship give you, like, a visa in Germany, too, and stuff? And
Yes, that was the point of the Schengen zone in the whole European Union was to make it easier to do business and travel and for everybody here in Europe to migrate around, which I like the European Union. I mean, I know that there's some forum members that would blast me for saying that, but I personally like the euro. I like the ease of doing business here compared to the old times when you had to do exchange your liras into Deutschmarks, and you know, if you were an Italian and you wanted to go live in Germany or Sweden, you'd have to go get a visa and get a proper job and all that bullshit.
Yeah, so you're basically a citizen of the European Union then.
Yes, it's all tied together like that.
Oh, wow, that's really convenient then. I guess in the old days you wouldn't have been able to do that.
No, in the old days, if you were Italian and you wanted to go to Germany, you got to go get a work visa, you know, you got to find a job, the company's got to help you with it.
Uh-huh.
Setting up business in another country would be extremely difficult. I think Europe's progressed a lot in that sense ever since after the war they started, because the other point of the European Union was to make sure that there were no more wars, basically, within Europe, because Europe's been at war with itself for, you know, thousands of years, and it's every time that they've had war, they've set themselves back.
Yeah, but I mean, some people in the conspiracy movement will tell you that those wars were engineered so that there could be a global government, you know, and the European Union is a step toward the global government, and it takes away the sovereignty of each nation, too. And actually, Europe hasn't had a war since World War II, you know, and before that, it was World War I, and before World War I, there wasn't a war for 100 years since the Napoleonic Wars. So Europe has been, you know, at peace for most of the last 200 years.
Did you seriously just say that? The World War II was the biggest war ever.
Well, yeah, but that lasted like 5 years, and then I'm talking about in the last 200 years.
The amount of damage in 5 years. I mean, the whole place was a mess. I mean, the whole reason my family left Italy to go to the U.S. was because of all the crappy wars that Europe put in. It's not even the wars, it's the downtime after the wars and the rebuilding the economy that set them back.
Yeah, but I mean, before World War I, there was like 100 years of peace, you know, between the Napoleonic Wars, you know, of 1815 to World War I, you know. I'm just saying, you know, it depends on who you ask. Some people say that those wars were engineered to create, like, a global government and stuff.
There's tons of wars throughout Europe in the 18th century?
Yeah, in some of the 18th... Yeah, but I'm talking about between the Napoleon Wars of 1800 to 1815.
You mean, like, the big wars?
Yeah, between that and World War I, there was 100 years of peace in Europe. Because during that 100 years, the European empires took their wars to other countries.
You can go on Wikipedia and look. I'm looking at it right now. There was tons of wars between that 100 years.
No, those were world wars where, you know, like Britain took, you know, the war abroad to India or to the Opium Wars, you know, but not within Europe itself.
Not as big as World War I or World War II, but as the Napoleonic War or the, what's it called? I mean, okay, it wasn't that, they weren't as big, but they were still ongoing, and they were...
You mean within Europe or without Europe?
Within Europe.
Okay, yeah, well, I mean, what I read and what I heard was that, you know, there was 100 years of peace after the Napoleon Wars, and that the European powers took their wars overseas to other countries, like the Opium Wars in China, and they invaded, you know, Africa, South Africa, and India.
I mean, that happened because that's when the European colonization started to happen.
Well, yeah, so they started making wars abroad.
16th, 17th century.
But not within Europe, yeah.
And I understand, but then they were fighting. the Europeans were still fighting each other. They're just fighting each other on different lands. You know, you had the British and the French were fighting over Canada. The British were fighting the Americans for America. That kind of thing.
Yeah. Well. Anyways, that's another topic, but
yeah, it's a huge another topic. I mean, there's been,
you know, that's just what I heard. You know, yeah.
There's hundreds of wars here in Europe. If you're really into that, European history has a lot of it.
Oh yeah, I've studied European history. Well, most of those wars were during like the Middle Ages and the Dark Ages. I mean, it's gotten less and less frequent.
Yeah, but I like that stuff, don't you? You're a big documentary watcher, so I like, you know. I like watching those kind of documentaries too. I find it interesting.
Yeah, during like the Middle Ages, there was a lot of wars. I mean, between the fall of the Roman Empire in 476 AD and the 1400s. I mean, there was a lot of wars then too. And
but I think that's what makes Europe an interesting place, is because of all this war and the shifting of the cultures, and you can see how the Czech people are kind of Germanic and how Italians are kind of Spanish, you know, from the origins of, and it's just because of all these wars and the mixing of lands and the mixing of people, the languages, everything. And I find that absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I mean, wars get a lot of attention. What I've heard is that the average person in ancient history did not ever fight a war. It's just that the history books make it look that way because history likes to talk about wars, and the average person did not participate in a war, so
because
it's kind of like exaggerated.
The winner of the war, I mean, the wars changed the outcome of the future, so yeah, they're a big deal.
Yeah, it's just something that history books focus on, that's what I've heard, so I mean, it's not a part of every person's, the average person's life. You know, and you know, especially American history, they like to focus on history as being one war after another, you know, whereas, you know, the average person just had a very ordinary, dull life, you know, without any participating, you know, in any war, you know.
Well, yeah, you can't really compare the U.S., though, to Europe. It's only a country of 200 years with a very small history, so
yeah. Well, even before the 200 years, I mean, America was settled in the early 1600s, so it's I mean, the settlement was like,
yeah,
400
no,
years,
as
you
far
know.
As a country, it's still a new, it's a baby country, it's nowhere near as old, you know, as a place like Italy's, you know, thousands of years old. I mean,
yeah, it's just that wars, what I mean is wars get all the attention, you know, but it doesn't mean that they're happening to everyone everywhere, kind of. I mean, history just makes it look that way, because, you know, wars get the attention a lot, and, but the average person, you know, just lives and works and raises a family and doesn't participate in a war, so.
I agree.
That's what I mean, yeah. Anyways, is there anything else you want to talk about Germany or Berlin? I mean, we've already gone a little over two hours yet.
We've gone over everything, though.
Yeah, okay. I mean, is there anything else that we've missed so far?
No, just to wrap it up, no, I think that Berlin is I'm enjoying it a lot, and I do think it's a good base for a lot of guys. If they don't know where they want to be, I think it's a good starting point for a lot of guys to start out here in Europe and get away from American culture or Anglo culture, either one, and still have access to high standards, jobs, even if you're just an English speaker with no German, and traveling throughout Europe. I think it's a good base.
Yeah. Definitely sounds like it. I mean, this has been a very informative 2 hours. I mean, you've given us so much valuable real-life information.
Yeah, it's too long. I think you're going to have to cut it up a little bit.
Yeah, well, 2 hours is fine. I mean, movies are 2 hours, too, so why not, you know, podcasts, you know? I mean, it depends on how interested somebody is. I mean,
I guess
you know.
So.
You know,
I would still break them up into 30-minute segments.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we could label it or something and divide it. We'll talk about that later. So what would you say to guys that want to go abroad to, like, Europe or something, but are just afraid, you know, or something's just holding them back?
You need to just pack your bag and go. And don't worry about jobs or anything, because once you get there, you will figure it out. Well, why are these people... I feel like a lot of guys on the forum are worrywarts, and they're worrying about shit that they don't even... should, you know, one step at a time, and stop trying to take shortcuts and figure everything out all at once, because it doesn't work that way. You just got to move there and make it happen yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's like less talk and more action. What I found is that if you think about something too much, you start to get nervous and you know, that fear.
A lot of guys, I think they talk themselves out of actually going abroad.
Yeah, exactly. Their mind makes excuses, especially if you're in a state of fear. You know, very often it's better to just do it, you know, and not think about it, you know. You know, like, you know what you need to do, so you just, you know, take the action and do it and not...
I'm more afraid of regretting something that I didn't do than making some big mistake myself. So I don't know where these guys get their mentality from, but they're going to get too old and never have, you know, lived abroad like they wanted to in their life, and they're going to regret not even trying.
Well, yeah, I mean, because time is precious, and you made a good point, because I heard that, I mean, there's a saying that you regret more what you didn't do than what you did do.
Time is the most important, you know. There's always going to be jobs, there's always going to be money, especially in any first world country. You'll find a way to make a living, I guarantee it. If you can't make a living in a first world country, there's something wrong with you. You need to go find a skill or some kind of specialty. But you should be able to make a living in pretty much every first world country.
Yeah, it's like, even if you go to the wrong country, you can at least, you know, at least you'll learn something from that experience. You know, it's better than not doing nothing. Anything.
Right, but they need to stop worrying about jobs and money. They need to stop with this contacting girls online and having them wait for them or whatever, and that being their excuse to go. You don't go to go live abroad just for one particular girl. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
You go to live abroad because you want to be outside of America. You want to go experience new culture. You want to go travel. You know, you're gonna pick the wrong country, and it's just gonna be for a girl, and it's gonna be pathetic.
Yeah, exactly.
To go live there just for a girl.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's good advice, man. I mean,
Other than that, I don't really have any other advice besides just do it.
Yeah, so do you have any future plans, or?
I do. I told you I got my future plan. I'm going to be going to Poland. I'm going to be going to the Czech Republic. I'm probably going to go check out some other countries here in Eastern Europe. I haven't really sat down and made a list, but yeah, I'm going to be doing some more traveling here pretty soon. For now, I'm just working, saving money, and enjoying Berlin.
Well, great. That sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, you have a lot to look forward to.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, well, thanks for, you know, letting me interview you and for sharing all this with us.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Have me on the next one, and I don't know. I wish all the happier broaders well.
Okay, great. We'll talk to you next time. And so that's it for this edition of the Happier Abroad podcast. I hope you all learned something and are inspired and motivated to go overseas, whether it's to Europe or another part of the world. Anyways, thanks for joining us, everyone, and have a good night, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.